You can't podcast with pants is how I want to begin this podcast. The first words uttered. Hello and welcome to Watch Out, a movie podcast. I am Mitchell.
I'm Harry.
And pretty much we just decided we were going to make a podcast like last week and, well, we're doing it now. And
three years in the making or something.
Yeah, we've known each other for since like 2016. Both work in like digital media and like corporate video and like that whole kind of production scene, various
that shit's boring. Let's talk about Joker.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the gist. We decided we would start this by talking about Joker, which fortunately for us isn't too irrelevant. It's been out for like a week. It could have been way worse, but I think a week is a good amount of time.
I think people will be talking about it for a while anyhow.
Yeah, true. Especially
time soon.
Yeah, especially if Scorsese keeps sassing the comic book fans, then this fire will keep burning for a while. So today we're going to talk about Joker, which we've both seen. We haven't talked about yet.
Yes.
All right. So, Harrison, what did you think of Joker?
I don't know if I told you this yet, but I've seen it twice now.
Ooh.
I really, really dug this movie. It's easily the best movie I've seen this year. I like it a lot. I think it's great as a film fan, but it's even better as a Batman fan, which I don't think a lot of comic books you can say about, because normally, you know, the movie adaptions are a bit different, but I think this one's actually enhanced as a fan of the source material.
All right. When I briefly ran into you at the office like last week, you told me that you really liked it, but that was it.
Yeah.
I had not seen it at that point. I only saw it probably, I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday. I also liked it. I don't think I loved it quite as much as you, by the sounds of it. It really stumped me, honestly. For like, when I walked out of the cinema, I was just like kind of speechless in a weird way, and not in the sense that like it's like a masterpiece. I was just like very torn. Like,
okay.
It has just stumped me, and I've been really scrambling to try and get a consensus together. I definitely enjoyed it from start to finish. It is very much like Taxi Driver 2. Like, it's
yeah,
and that's fine. I'm not gonna try and just like compare, like grill it in that regard, because there's like, you can't just compare movies to other movies all day, because like, you know, it's not a ripoff. It's original enough. I will say, just on a little side note, it is weird to see Joaquin Phoenix follow up You Were Never Really Here with Joker, because they're pretty much like the same movie.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
If anything,
it was just like, is what you would, what's it called again? You Were Never Really Here. Is that just going to be like a fat Joker movie?
Pretty much the fat Joker and the skinny Joker.
Yeah. I mean, he's not actually that, but just comparatively between these two roles, like just the weight loss is so obvious.
Yeah, it is actually insane. Like, I don't want to get too much into Joaquin Phoenix's performance just straight off the bat, but it is like the best part of the movie. Like, there is so much to it. When I walked out of the cinema, I honestly thought like that performance was too good. That like, it's distractingly good. It's insane. It could be. I haven't seen like every single Joaquin Phoenix movie, but I think that might be his best performance. I've seen a lot of his movies. Like, You Were Never Really Here, which I just mentioned from last year, was incredible, and
was
his performance
last
was incredible.
Year?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how long it was. I think it was in festivals for a while, but it only just like got, at least it came out here last year, is all
I
can say.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, we are based in Australia.
Yeah, g'day.
So sometimes we just don't get things until a lot longer. It's not as bad as it used to be, but like back in the day, we'd get movies like 6 months later. Like, people had forgotten by the time we got them.
Family movies still get screwed over here because they're releasing school holidays for our primary school kids. And so it's like 3-4 months after American releases.
Yeah, like, that makes sense, actually.
All the big Disney ones come out December here.
Yeah. I remember my friends going to see Wall-E, and turns out it didn't come out until like 8 months later or some shit. It was ridiculous. And instead they saw Kung Fu Panda, which is also great, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a step down for Wall-E, but whatevs.
We'll debate that later in a future episode.
Okay, put a pin in that.
Anyways, back to Joker. Jump from Kung Fu Panda to Joker. Yeah, I was really torn up because I think I've seen too many like David Lynch art films, because I think the movie had all these like not major flaws. I wouldn't say it had any like, you know, there was only like nitpicks really. But all the like nitpicks I had, like structural issues, pacing issues, like strange kind of directing at points. Like, where I can criticize it on one side, on the other side, like, that also in a weird film language kind of way, like, kind of enhances this transition we feel through the character. Like, at the start of the movie, he's like a mess. He's not going anywhere. He's just no hope in life, and there's just nothing happening. And that kind of like weirdly reflects in the film language. And I feel weird bringing up film language when it comes to the Joker movie, because it's a Joker movie.
I think it's important with this case because it's actually like, I don't like to use pretentious terms like this, but it's kind of, it's more cinema than like, you know, the Marvel movies, for example, which I still like, but it's more.
Oh, yeah.
It's got more.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Not just because it's a period piece, but it's got more of a classical filmmaking style to it. Film language, I think, is very important with this one, particularly because it's honestly quite a quiet movie, not super quiet.
Mm.
So all those elements really do enhance the movie because, like, God, the sound design and the soundtrack were immaculate.
Yeah, I remember the cinematography in this movie is like it's incredible. It's really good. The whole movie has such a strong look and aesthetic. Everything about it is really slick. And yeah, for sure, it is like, in terms of like, I don't know, merit as an actual movie on its own, this is really like, it's a throwback for me to that era where like superhero movies, weren't part of a franchise. Like they weren't part of like the cinematic universe or like part 10 and whatever the hell's going on. And not to say that there's anything like, I don't really have that big a problem with the Marvel cinematic universe. I am getting a little bit tired of it, but it's still like fine. Like I don't dislike it. But Joker is just, it's a standalone movie. Like people are tossing up and like, arguing over whether his Joaquin Phoenix Joker is going to like return in like these Robert Pattinson reboot thing that's happening, but he probably won't, I think.
I've heard talks about it. I'd be surprised. I know Todd Phillips, the director, went in initially saying this is just a one-off. There's not going to be continuity, there's not going to be sequels, blah 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 blah. But I've heard Joaquin Phoenix express his interest in continuing the character. So
that's
never say never, but it's probably better as a standalone because I'll get into that more later. But you know, it's breath of fresh air in movies in general because while it is quite a throwback sort of movie, and wears a lot of its influences on its sleeve, I still think it's quite fresh, especially in like the big budget box office smash that it is, because like it's a lot more grimier than movies are wanting to go lately, and it's interesting to see this do well.
Yeah, I'm glad it is doing well. Like, I don't know. It's interesting. I remember like a year ago, or two, however long ago, I remember Fox started coming out with really weird shit. Like when Logan came out, that kind of changed the game because they were like, oh, hey, we're not going to make X-Men movies like we at the moment. We're going to just make our own weird standalone stuff like Logan, like Deadpool even. They were just like completely off format, like out of the nothing like what Marvel was doing. And I remember thinking at the time, we probably talked about it heaps, but like I remember thinking that this is like the right route that Fox needed to go to compare to stand up to Marvel, because nobody could stand up to Marvel. Like DC tried and they failed horribly, but did now you're back at it and like they tried. You saw Justice League.
They tried. They tried too hard.
They tried way too hard. But now Fox has weirdly gone quiet. I don't know what they're doing.
Has Disney bought them out? I can't keep up with that.
Disney has like half bought them. I think they kind of own them. But yeah, but now DC's like, you know what? We're just going to do that instead by the looks of it. And now they're like, you know what? Screw it. Like $100 bajillion budget Aquaman movie. That's like a like five. It's like a TV series crammed into the length of like pretty much two full movies back to back. That's a long movie. And And now they're just like, you know what? We're going to make a weird Batman reboot. We're going to do the Joker movie. Who knows what's going to come out next? But I hope it's more stuff like this.
Yeah, I have the feeling, though, this is lightning in a bottle. Because, like, there's just way too many elements that align to make this movie possible. Yeah. And
a lot of this movie feels like a fluke. It really feels like they got lucky with Joaquin Phoenix. I think he brought like the whole movie's worth of character to the role. Like, not that another actor couldn't play the Joker fine, but I think this movie was literally like Todd Phillips was, I think that was the director's name.
The guy that did Hangover.
Yeah. from what I've seen of his movies in the past, it seems like he definitely had like a comedy origin. And I think in that filmmaking sense, I reckon he structured the movies around, and this is just me guessing, he got all these actors, these comedians that he got to develop this repertoire, and then he, or this rapport, it's a fancy film word that I stumbled three times, and just point a camera at them, essentially. There's like a script, but like, so much room for improv and stuff. And I reckon he's brought that same kind of mentality to the Joker, because from what I've heard from behind the scenes and stuff, is it sounds like a lot of the big stuff was improvised. A lot of the like dance numbers, apparently the first bathroom scene was not in the script. Apparently it's supposed to be just like a scene of him being like, oh, what have I done? And that's instead they made it one of the best scenes in the movie.
Because that scene stood out to me on my first viewing as, I'm not going to say weird because there's a lot of weird stuff in this movie, but it felt out of place. Second time watching, completely makes sense. But,
Yeah, and that kind of ties into what I was weirdly saying before, that, like that kind of film language sense that the movie has, the how the whole movie kind of starts like unfocused and with no direction, but then as it progresses it like sharpens to the point where we feel the Arthur character's transformation like with him, and by the point at the end of the movie where he's become the Joker, it's like it has all sharpened to this point where it like feels right, you know, like it feels like we've this transformation is what this whole movie was about. And that even those little scenes of, I don't know, transcendence where he like almost breaks from being Arthur and you see the Joker, like before the name Joker is at all in the air, it's he's evolving into something else. And it's like, there's like the way it's done with all those like bizarre dance scenes and like just little moments with him experiencing like joy, just relishing in the moment by himself. It's like those are the like it's all it's the only escape from like the hell that this character's gone in and been living in for his entire life and through the like entire movie. But it's just in those like transcendent moments that like it seems out of place, but then as the movie progresses, it's like this is what it's all been building to. This is what is happening. I don't know if that made any sense. I feel like I kind of looped around on my ramble just now, but I feel like the gist came through.
So I think, yeah, like, how to respond to that? Yeah, no, I think it came through. It's just, you probably over explained it.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about how like immersive this movie is, because like, it's pretty much a character study sort of movie. And
yes,
because of his amazing performance that we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes about, because of the film language, because it's such a small, intimate cast, because it's quite voyeuristic with its camera angles and stuff to make you feel like you're watching this person from the outside. I find it a really immersive movie, and in a very uncomfortable way, obviously, because, like, you know, it's villain. It's
That's true, and it's a very similar feel and immersion to You Were Never Really Here, and even Taxi Driver as well.
Yes,
where it's even almost like a Joaquin Phoenix like running gag at this point, that Joaquin Phoenix movies are pretty much just like extended close ups on Joaquin Phoenix, and that's the movie.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. I watched Inherent Vice the other night.
Oh, I've never seen that.
It was pretty good. Joaquin Phoenix was really good in it. You could just look at him and so much would just come through. I don't know how he does it. He's like a magic man.
I guess that's insane. I reckon he got some powers from a phoenix, and that's why he took the name. Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation.
Yeah, he also is he seems a little bit like actually insane in real life. I'm sure he's nice, but like there's something strange about him, and it's like definitely shines through in this movie, I think. There's just something about the weirdness he captured as the Joker that I think like it's almost like I see why like all these 16-year-olds are relating to it and like connecting with it.
Oh god.
Because I can feel that inside. I remember when I was like a loner teen in school, and I just like had all just these weird moments. A lot of the scenes I really liked with him were all like the scenes of him just by himself. Like not even when he was like doing weird shit with the Joker makeup on, just like when he was by himself and he was either like, you know, talking to himself, doing just all these weird motions, or like even if he was just like freaking out and getting aggressive, like
or shooting the gun.
Yeah, they just feel so genuine. Small. Like I feel like we've all had those weird just moments where we've been home alone for like too long, and we're just like just walking around the house in our underwear, just, you know, you can't podcast with pants on. Maybe I'm giving too much. Maybe this is just me.
No, I think it's just you, dude.
All right, delete this. But nah, again, like you could just get caught up in just all this intricacy in Joaquin's performance. Like you could just go on forever. I think there's so much to see in his character. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fully fleshed out in a way that is extremely rare.
I think we should try our best to lay off Joaquin Phoenix for now and try and talk about other stuff in the movie, because so far we've been talking for 20 minutes about just how good Joaquin Phoenix is.
Well, Robert De Niro is in it, and he's fine. But I want to talk about the... actually, it is kind of funny that he's in it, considering this is basically Taxi Driver with clown makeup. Like, to a crazy extent. Spoilers, but it hits nearly every narrative beat of Taxi Driver. You know, you've got grimy New York, I mean Gotham, you've got a very unstable character, but the difference is I think Travis comes off as an anti-hero and Joker obviously comes off as a villain.
Yeah, we're going more into that later. That's something I was hoping to touch on.
Yeah, definitely. But Crime in New York, Robert De Niro, the ending is very similar. It's all about an election as well. There's a lot, like, look, it's a bit of a meme to say, oh, it's just Taxi Driver, but like, yeah, it is. And there's a crazy amount of coincidence, not coincidences, but like clear imitations, but it is enough different that it's not an issue with me for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where you saw this movie, but at the Astor, they played like a couple trailers before the movie, and one of them was Taxi Driver intentionally, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I did not see it at the Astor. I just saw it at, you know, Hoyts.
And another trailer they showed was Tommy Wiseau as the Joker.
That is horrifying, and images of it still keep popping up, and I don't like it. It's funny.
It's great.
Give him that. That's my official statement. It's funny. That's it.
Is that your review of the movie?
No. This movie is surprisingly not that funny.
Well, I actually wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, no, I was literally about to switch gears to that as well.
I expected this to be funny in a dark way, but it's not laugh out loud funny. It has like maybe three jokes that land purposely. Yes.
It pretty much just has three jokes, this whole movie, but they're really good. And I'm a big fan of like chaos. I love just shit going wrong. Like in real life, you know, just in a cartoonish sense, there's little moments where just everything goes wrong and it's almost like, wow, like the universe has just done the most cartoonishly like heel turn twist of fate to just screw me over right now. And in moments like that, I just like start maniacally laughing. Like I think it's so funny, just the chaos of it all.
And I pegged Mitch as a chaotic neutral years ago.
Yeah, that's me. I love chaos. But yeah, there's these moments of comedy in this movie that are like genuinely outstanding. And they really are funny in just the right tone. It's in that way that's like, it's just pure chaos. Like it's like such a dark joke happening at the wrongest time. And it's funny. It really puts you in like that twisted headset that, you know, of the Joker, like the way he sees the world. And like I want to list them off, but I don't want to spoil them.
So just to clear it up, what jokes are we talking about? Because we're getting into spoilers territory anyway.
I'll try not to spoil it. Just I'll try and be vague. I like when, oh my God, I like when he drops the gun.
Yes.
That I thought was so funny. Even how he tried to play it off in the scene was really funny. Like if I had a child and had a clown at their birthday, and as a bit, they just like drop a gun and then go like, woo, and then scramble and grab it. I would laugh so hard. But then again, I'm also like,
I don't insane. Think you would laugh if you were in Gotham.
Yeah, if it was actually real gun, then maybe not. But there's also the when he walks into the glass door, the like wrong, like the most intense time. That was good. And when I'll be vague here, but when he has to open the door.
Yeah. So we identified the three jokes in the movie.
Those are the three jokes.
Because I expected it to have like a crass, dark humor, but no, it's actually quite humorless. And most of the laughs in both cinema screenings I went to are in the in-between moments where they're like awkwardly laughing at what they're looking at because they don't know how to process it, especially him laughing. But I like that the movie also does this, like when he goes to a stand-up show and he's laughing at the setups, not the punchlines. And that's what the audience was doing most of the time as well. And I was like, this is geniusly crafted.
Yeah, that is good. I did like that. It is a kind of thing. I heard somebody say that all of the themes are very heavy-handed in the movie. And that is true. Like, one of my main criticisms of the movie is that even though I admire it touching on all these themes like mental illness and class disparity in a way that's not like, oh, but we can all get along in the end. It's really like eat the rich kind of like moral. And you don't see that often because, you know, rich people make these movies. But I did like that they went in that way. But again, it's really just kind of like a backdrop for the event.
Dispute that. That's not really what the theme is. Well, I mean, it's a theme of the movie, like it's a backdrop, but I don't think that's what one of the themes of the actual movie is. I don't think it's about that at all. I do kind of want to talk about, though, like, so coming into this movie, some of the early press junkies and, you know, all the early screenings or whatnot, was talking about how, like, controversial this movie is going to be. And I just don't see it, because it really shows that we haven't had a movie like this in a very long time. You know, it reminds me of Taxi Driver, obviously, or probably more accurately, A Clockwork Orange. Yeah, like, I don't understand where this controversy comes from, because the movie doesn't promote the character. This isn't an anti-hero story. This is clearly a villain story. I had a few concerns going into a Joker movie. Obviously, giving the Joker a backstory, usually not the best idea. Secondly, you go, oh, hopefully the Joker is not the lesser of two evils, or his evil act does a good thing. Joker is supposed to be evil incarnate, period.
Yes.
And they don't do that. There is no opposing force. There is no antagonist that the protagonist is against. He is the protagonist and the antagonist at the same time. Which is the only way to do this.
That is true.
Without it being...
That is a good point.
Morally bankrupt. Because it's not like, well, he was a bad serial killer, but he killed the evil business. No, there's nothing of that.
No.
He doesn't achieve anything good at all.
No, that's true.
He killed someone who was, like, did nothing wrong. He might be living a little richer than other people, but he did nothing wrong. it was purposeful, and it's pretty hinted that this revolution he started did not make Gotham a better place. It made it a worse place.
That's true. Like, and I can see like where the events he inspires. Like I can see why. Like in real life, if somebody was like trying to fight class, you know, such severe class disparity and it like eliciting this movement of like the rich are screwing us over, then I probably would see like, I'd probably be like backing the Joker until like mass murders start happening. But, what was I going to say before? I think they're kind of antagonists to this movie, but they're not like the major, they're not the real enemy. The real enemy is him. Like he's the threat.
Yes.
And it's essentially him slowly coming to realize that. But the characters of Thomas Wayne and what's his name? The talk show host Murray something.
Murray as
Murray, yeah. Robert De Niro's character. They're kind of villains.
I don't think so.
But what they really are, they just kind of represent that like the 1%, like the upper class looking down. Like it's not specifically anything that they do, even though they get thrown into like villainous lights kind of later in the movie, like antagonistically at least towards the Joker or Arthur Fleck. They're not bad people. Like we get the impression that Thomas Wayne actually is an asshole, but besides that, like, he's, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because, like, you know, Thomas Wayne is, in most versions of the character, is represented in a very angelic light because, well, he doesn't spend a lot of time alive in these stories.
Yes.
So it's interesting to see a gritty version of Thomas Wayne that's not murderous Batman in another continuity, but that's a story for another time.
It is interesting to see characters like Thomas Wayne seen from the opposite perspective. Like,
yes,
from all the other Batman stories, it's usually from like Bruce Wayne's perspective, or from like his kind of upper echelon, like his friends and like the, you know, standout people in Gotham City. But it's interesting seeing them from the Arthur Fleck's perspective, like a struggling poor guy. And
yeah,
it's just cool. Again, it's cool to see. I'm a big fan of films twisting perspective, like getting insight into another perspective. But at the same time, and that whole talk of the Joker becoming too sympathetic, I think just a bit, I think it still sympathizes him a little bit too much. And there's like a weird balance. And again, this is where this movie's been like sitting restlessly within me, because like all my arguments kind of have counter arguments, and I agree with both, and it's like this endless loop of,
are you getting a second personality
criticisms? Yeah, oh my god. But yeah, because I see with this controversy was more around its potential influence as a movie being potentially dangerous. Like you look back at movies like, everyone says Taxi Driver and Clockwork Orange, but I also think a lot more of something like Fight Club. That movie kind of has had a really interesting effect on men, especially young men, and has really kind of imbued this toxic masculinity in a lot of culture. There's this real macho culture, even though the movie was supposed to be a deconstruction of masculinity. That was the whole point of Fight Club.
That's the funny thing.
People still see it as that. People see it as like, oh, the man's movie. Like, you've got to be cool, tough, sexy Brad Pitt, man. It's like they completely miss the point. And I get that people are scared that Joker, especially how it ends, is not very good for some potentially troubled, you know, young minds to see. And I kind of agree with that. I think I see why people are stressed out. Like, people are scared that there's going to be like another shooting or something in response to this, and I get it.
Look, yeah, you're right, but I think people like that will always find influences anyway. I don't think we should be censoring art that is distinctively speaking out against this sort of behavior and this sort of feat, like exploring it in a very like way to deconstruct it. Because like, if someone blames Fight Club for some people starting fight clubs or a terrorist group or whatnot, it's like, well, the movie was saying, don't do that because it's shit and like stupid and morally corrupt. Why would you do that? Like, that's the thing. I don't think it's the movie's fault anymore if people are inspired by it when it's supposed to be saying. It would be different. It'd be very different, though, going back to my previous point, if he did do something. And he killed someone, for example, and he became a martyr of something that was potentially good, then I would have a problem with it. But that's not what the movie is. It's very much, yeah. And like, going back to sympathetic, like, I don't find him particularly sympathetic. Maybe it's because of my closeness with the character in many other mediums, you know. But I don't find him super sympathetic, because this is a rare version of the Joker that has empathy, at least at one stage of his life, which means he understands what effect he has on people. Because you saw when he shot those guys in the subway. Initially, he knew what he did. Like, he felt bad. But because he has that ability to have empathy, means that everything he does after is way worse, because he is in control and he understands what that means for other people.
Yes, I'll give you that. That is true. I think the main concern is that, and it's like weird that it's a fault and a compliment at the same time. And the same thing goes for Fight Club, where even though, yes, it does do a good job at villainizing these characters, it also does too good a job of sympathizing them as well. So it's like that it puts you in their shoes too well to justify what they do in the moment. like you're watching them do these things and you're like, I get why they're doing this, even though they're bad. But anyways, I guess we'll just go on,
again,
we'll just give a little...
Again, I disagree with that. Oh. I think how I'm going to put this.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? It's such a strange topic.
Yeah, I honestly think it doesn't... The main point of the sympathy, obviously, is that he potentially has a brain injury. And whilst that is true, I just think that because he enjoys it too much and because he is doing it for such a selfish reason, basically doing it because to be noticed and to be recognized.
Yeah, that's true.
Rather than for any sort of moral thing. It's completely a selfish... Everything he does is completely selfish.
Yeah. You are right.
I think, yeah, I don't have sympathy for this villain at all. Yeah.
It's a weird case where, yeah, I don't... Once he starts... And we'll just go into spoilers at this point. Like, even
I think we've gone
way
past
that.
Official
spoiler tag. Oh, God, what was I saying? Oh, damn it. I've lost my train of thought. It's like the kind of thing where, yeah, I don't, once he starts killing people and starts enjoying it and starts like, you know, riding off that thrill and escaping into delusion, I'm like, okay, yeah, this guy's a monster. But at the end, when he succeeded, when he killed Murray on live TV and got saved by the crowd and like they were all cheering him on, I was like, yeah! You did it, man. You
made
it.
That's so interesting because I don't have that aspect at all.
Even though it's like a horrific, like, birth of a monster scene. You have seen it twice. I wouldn't mind actually watching it again.
It is worth a second watch.
I actually do want to watch it again. A lot of people, like, I know a lot of my friends have, they really didn't love it walking out. They thought it was okay. Their main criticisms were essentially, like, what I was saying before with how... The movie kind of has a really strange pace and like lack of direction for a large part. I said this before in my weird ramble about film language, because in the end it does shape and pull through into the whole Joker transformation, but it also does mean a lot of the movie is just Joaquin Phoenix being uncomfortable in various locations around Gotham. Even though Joaquin's performance is amazing, it still works because Joaquin carries like the whole movie on his shoulders, but it's still just him sitting in like a room doing nothing. A lot of the movie is just him sitting around and standing around and walking around. But he just makes it so captivating. The whole movie is mesmerizing.
Yeah, that's definitely the word I would use.
It's hard for me to criticize in that way. But those weird dance scenes. This is a bit of a side note. Those dance scenes. I really like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the last one. The only one I didn't like. There was only one of the dance scenes that I thought should be cut, and it's funny because it's like the poster image. It's him dancing down the stairs.
And
that scene felt weird to me.
By the cops.
Yeah, then the cops, and he just ran away. That one felt like it stood out to me. It's like I don't. This feels out of place. Like,
isn't it
along in the street?
His post.
He's on his way.
Killing the big
guy. He's on
guy.
His way. Yeah, it is.
So
it's,
like,
he's on his way to the live show.
Yeah, I think that's the relic.
Like, I get
like,
it.
He always dances after like a kill. Like it's some sort of like.
That's true.
Tranquility for him.
Yeah.
And
that dance scene. Is just outstanding. Like, even though you said you had mixed feelings about it, man, I loved it.
It's
just
great.
The rush of the moment, that whole scene where he is confronted by the three like yuppie
beautiful.
Kids, and then he shoots them. Like in that moment, like I completely forgot he had the gun on him, and when he started shooting them, it was just like it was like the first time we saw him being violent, and he chased that guy down. And like, and killed, like he was running and he chased him down and killed him. And it's like, the violence in this movie, like people were saying, I saw a post actually, I saw my cousin saying on Facebook, like, this movie's so good, we should all see it, which he does for pretty much every movie. But his mum, my aunt, responded, oh no, it looks too violent. And my cousin responded, oh no, it's not actually violent. I kind of disagree with that.
This is a
even
very
though there's not a
movie.
Lot of violence, even though there's not a lot of violence, the violence you see feels like real. It feels very. It feels like violence in like an Academy, like one of those Academy Award like artsy indie movie kind of things, where violence is like shocking and real. Like all the gun, all the shootouts, all the like. There isn't even any shootouts. There's like one. It just feels shocking, like real, like it feels way too real. It feels almost out of place, but that again, it works for the character's evolution really well, showing his, I don't know, like transcension into violence, and these, what's the word I'm looking for? Like that outlet becoming an option for him, but that climax, the actual talk show scene. Yeah. Oh man, that was good. That was so good.
And that the train scene before it was like intense.
Yeah. Again, I did like that scene, but I was saying this before and forgot to follow on, but like the whole thing with a lot of these little moments being really heavy-handed, like an example is the opening scene of him with the Everything Must Go sign and him getting it smashed over his head. It's like, oh, metaphors. The same thing kind of goes for that scene as well, where it's like, oh, he's getting saved by the clowns and he's better, like above the law now, kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
but it still worked as a solid scene. Like, yeah. It is still a mainstream cinema movie, so I'll give it that. And even
about those scenes as well, which I'll get into later.
Because, yeah, there's all those, like, one thing I will also add to this is the delusion sequences, I think, are actually outstanding. Like, I'm really mad at that because, and not in a bad way, I'm mad personally because I'm actually trying to write a script myself that features a delusional character, and the way they portray delusions in this is very similar to how I was going to do it, and I'm really angry that they stole it. but, like, I wish, and I've heard a lot of people say this, but I really wish they didn't have those cutaway flashbacks when it revealed that, like, all of these, like, this romance and all that were a delusion. I wish you just saw it in the moment and then knew. That would have just made it more impactful, because that scene where he's just home alone and then the neighbor girl comes in, Zazie Beetz' character, and she's like, what are you doing in my house? After, like, all these prior, like, really weird, out-of-place romance scenes that, like, were obviously delusions. It was shocking, and even then that moment, that I had a bad day line is like little nod to Killing Joke, which is nice to see. I like that this movie didn't just be the Killing Joke again. I like that it went its own angle, but it still was obviously a reference to it.
Speaking of the Killing Joke, I said earlier that this movie is good as a film fan, even better as a Batman fan. I think my understanding of the character and how he's written, you know, like a meta context, enhances this movie for me, because I think they truly capture the essence of what the Joker is, what he represents, everything perfectly in even a meta sense. Obviously, the biggest inspiration of it.
Yes, I'll agree to that.
Even obviously, the major inspiration of this is Taxi Driver, but the second most influence is The Killing Joke, which, if you don't know, is the quintessential Joker story. And in that, essentially, we get told a story of Joker's quote-unquote origin, where he has one bad day that leads him to be the Joker. And that's what's captured in this movie as well. But the key point of The Killing Joke is that what you're being told is potentially all a lie. Because the Joker himself recreates his origin in his own head multiple times potentially daily, potentially weekly, we don't know. But there's one line where he says, if I'm going to have a backstory, it might as well be multiple choice.
Yeah.
So the idea of the Joker is always that his origin is unknown.
Yeah.
And I think this movie has several nods to the entire movie being a similar case where it is actually not literal in this context of the universe as well.
Yeah, 100%. Like, this whole, the whole nature in which this movie handles delusion and fantasy is so, like, seamless. It just kind of happens and, like, phases in and out, and it really puts us in that, immerses us into that headspace that if you came out as a diehard Batman fan and were like, oh, this is just, this whole movie is just a fantasy of the Joker, like a dream of a backstory, you'd be like, yeah, you can't argue with that.
I think it's purposely made to be interpreted that way. This is one of the major topics I want to talk about.
if you were going to make a Joker movie, you'd have to handle it like that. Like,
yeah,
there's no other way they could have made this movie without doing that.
I think, yeah, there's several clues that this whole movie could be 50% true, 50% untrue. The time period is a clue to this. There's so many things because I think I told you this before we started, before I saw the movie rather, that I thought up the perfect ending for this movie, the perfect ending as a Batman fan I wanted to see in this movie.
Oh yeah, you did.
And I got 90% of it correct, which was like mind blowing.
Whoa, that's a good feeling. I do that all the time.
The last scene needs to be the Joker in Arkham telling the story to Batman. It's not quite that.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, no, but it's close
enough.
It's
the Joker in Arkham purposely not telling the story to his therapist, where he goes,
yeah,
with the line is, I thought of a joke and you would never really get it, which is a reference to The Killing Joke, where he... his backstory is a joke. His backstory in The Killing Joke is this sad comedian who loses his pregnant wife and loses everything in his life. But Joker thinks that is a backstory because he thinks it's funny and is the most dark and depressing thing ever. This movie is the same, where it's like there's so many like points of like complete irony and complete thematic storytelling that it becomes like really convenient, like the amount, for example, that clowns play a part in it. It's almost like predestiny. So it's almost like you can read it as the Joker thinking of how did I get to this point? How do I want to think my past is today? And the Arkham he's in at the end of the movie is different to the Arkham we see when he visits to find the records.
That's a good point. I did not notice that at all.
And there's one weird cut that completely doesn't match any of the editing in the rest of the movie, and that's when he's in the therapist office for the first time. And she talks about his past in the hospital, and it's got this one quick cut of him banging his head against a hospital wall. There's never another cut like that in the whole movie. There's never any reference other than that scene of him being in hospital prior. The cops don't follow up on it. His mum never says anything about it. His employer never says anything about it.
That's a good point.
And when he goes to Arkham, there's no recognition of that in the sense of the movie.
That is true. And I really hope you haven't just stumbled across a plot hole.
No, I don't think
that works.
And I don't 100% believe in this theory, by the way. I just think it's there so you can interpret it this way as a hardcore fan.
Yeah, it's always fun to interpret movies and stuff. I try not to get too in deep on that kind of stuff. Just I like to kind of try and see what actually, like, it is what it is in the movie kind of thing. But I like the openness to those kinds of interpretations.
And
that is an interesting one.
and his therapist in the start of the movie is a different actress to the one in the end, but they look similar but different.
Ooh, I will have to check that because I did not notice that. Oops.
Like, I think they purposely had two separate actresses that looked That's similar
really
but different.
That's a really interesting
concept. There was another bit of the puzzle. What am I thinking? Just the fact that the age difference between Batman and Joker in this universe.
Yeah, he's way older.
I think you could interpret it. Like, I'm not saying this is the truth within the movie, but I think it's kind of a cool concept that it's actually the modern era and this backstory he thought of is completely nonsense, that it can't be that. It can't be the 80s when this all happened. Impossible.
Yeah, they could have done, if they were going to go down that route, like, wholeheartedly, they could have gone harder with it in a very kind of, like, almost, I'm going to compare it to It Follows, the, like, 2015 horror movie or whatever, mm-hmm. where, like, the sense of date, time is intentionally askew. Like, yes. You watch that movie and you can't pick what era it's set in. And it gives the whole movie this kind of dreamlike feeling.
Interesting. Gotham, the TV show, does that.
Oh, well, yeah. There you go.
You can't pit what era that's in. It's got some technology that makes no sense with some of the other technology. It's got, like, old 50s computers, okay. But some other techs,
yeah.
Like...
That is very... And that, yeah, it's a very comic book kind of vibe as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to talk again just about how good that goddamn talk show scene is. Just that whole thing, like, that scene is just incredible. Like, the whole evolution we feel in that character.
Oh, sorry, I forgot my last clue.
Oh, yeah.
In the credits, Joaquin Phoenix is specifically credited as Arthur Fleck, not the Joker.
I did notice that, yeah.
I feel like that's, considering the movie is called Joker, and he actually abandons his name during the movie, I feel like calling him Arthur Fleck, as in another character, and the Frank Sinatra song, when he leaves, when he kills the doctor right at the end, the Frank Sinatra song plays a line that hasn't played throughout the movie. The movie, like, the song plays multiple times through the movie, but it plays a bit of the song that talks about being a pirate, a poser, or something else, like multiple different roles. And it's exactly when he leaves the doctor's office. I think there's a lot of clues that it's like, this is the Joker's imagination the whole time.
That's fun.
I just feel like there's too many clues not to be purposeful.
Yeah, it's a completely fair interpretation. But that, again, backpedaling what I was talking about just before the talk show scene. No, I just can't get enough of that scene. Like, I would just want to watch that scene on, like, just over and over again. Just because the evolution we see in Arthur Fleck's character in that moment, because, again, heavy spoilers, he goes into that planning to kill himself, like, live on TV to spite this Murray guy played by Robert De Niro for making fun of him and then bringing him onto the show to further just mock him. And instead, he walks out the moment the flag opens, like the curtain, which you've seen him rehearsing for and struggling to plot out, when it actually happens, just in the moment, it just switches on. And he walks out with this confidence that he's never had in the movie up until this point. And he starts bickering back and forth. He's actually like an entertaining guest. We're in the clip that they watched, and from the movie so far, he's like a stumbling mess and like can barely even talk to a stranger without bursting into those like compulsive laughs that he does.
Yeah.
And he doesn't laugh one bit during that scene, like not a single stammer.
Oh no,
you're right. There is. Sorry. During that entire scene, we see him go, we can just see him finding this confidence and finding this, like, this Joker. That is the moment the Joker is born within him. Like, that's when the character first becomes the Joker, in that moment. And he's back and forth with Murray, and when he starts arguing with him. And it's interesting how, like, both Murray and Thomas Wayne were both, like, father figures to him. And in the end, he turned on both of them. And because they were, like, horrible to him. And his whole thing where, like, he treats bad people badly. He'll kill people who mistreat him. Like, throughout the whole movie, that's a whole... Not a single person who he killed didn't hurt him in some way or manipulate him or abuse him, including his mother, the other clown, the guy who gave him the gun, even... I forget. There's other characters throughout there, but it's the kind of thing. Like, he only lets the small person clown, he lets him go because he was nice to him. And throughout the entire movie, he was always he was never mean to him. And that, I think, is also a very Joker thing. It enhances the unpredictability of the whole character. That kind of wild, not randomness, but unpredictability, I think, is such a crucial element to the Joker character.
Yes.
But in that, again, in that scene with the talk show, you see him go, you see the moment, like, you see him rehearsing even, like, setting up for his punchline, which is supposed to be him killing himself and shooting himself in the head with his gun. But in the moment, he just flips it on himself and he shoots the talk show host instead. And it's just so shocking. And just the way he sits there for, like, you see the footage, like, on the through the TVs, like, across Gotham. But, like, he just sits there for, like, this time, just, like, sitting there content. And it's just, oh, like, it's so good.
That reminds me of one of the jokes we actually missed. When they're showing back the footage, like the news coverage on, like, multiple TVs, they show the rant of the Joker before shooting Murray. They show the whole footage of a man dying on TV, but these TV networks are censoring them when he says fuck, but they'll show a murder.
I missed that, actually. That's really good.
I only saw it the second time. I was like, that's funny. A good touch.
Oh, man. Just what a good scene. So many really strong scenes throughout this movie. And I guess we'll kind of start to wrap it up. But, like...
Yeah.
So you love it. You fucking love this movie. You're all about it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I've been thinking about it nonstop, so I can't say it's not an interesting movie, and I have to recommend it on that note. Like, it's worth a watch. It's a very interesting movie. And if anything, Joaquin Phoenix's performance is just watch that. Like, and that is the whole movie. It's just his performance, pretty much. But it's so captivating. I do still think that the movie kind of has some weird pacing issues. The direction is a bit strange. There's a lot of strange bits that just kind of happen, and a lot of little moments that are kind of out of place, which, as we've been discussing, also kind of enhance the movie in a weird, distorted way. Yeah. Could be. I hope for the movie's sake that it is not... that it's all intended, that everything I'm saying about film language and meta narrative was intended. In which case, like, it did a great job.
I there's one little nitpick. Like, I've got one major nitpick, and I'm stressing this is a nitpick, but it is something I don't like when they do in Batman lore. So one of the big climaxes is when the Waynes are gunned down, right? Which is actually shocking. I didn't expect this to happen in the movie.
It did feel like it just kind of happened really... Like, they rushed it in. And I did like that kind of connection.
But it was so shocking in the moment.
It feels weird. It felt like I was caught off guard by that, even though it totally, like, makes sense for the characters for that to happen then.
Yeah. But having the Joker directly inspire... the death of the Waynes changes Batman's motivations from justice to vengeance, and I really hate when they do that.
Yeah, that's what the Tim Burton Batman did, didn't it? And everybody hated that.
Well, I think it hasn't aged well, because that's before a lot of pre-established what we can understand as Batman's quote-unquote canon. It's very loose anyway.
Yep.
But, I really don't like when they do that, because then it turns Batman into not such a hero if he's just angry at a specific person and not understanding that he just wants to stop this happening to other people. Yep. I know it doesn't really matter in a greater sense, but it's always a thing that annoys me when it happens, unless it's exceptionally intentional for a follow-up.
Yeah. This is pretty much how I feel about the entirety of the Man of Steel movie, that just completely destroys the Superman lore, just completely misunderstands fundamentally everything about Superman, about Jonathan Kent, about
That's a story for another day, man.
But that's another...
This is the good DC.
That's not a can of worms. Yeah.
Just honestly, how do you think this Joker stacks up against some of the other Jokers that we've seen on screen in the media?
That is a tough question, and I think I actually had in my note a little reminder that I just wrote Jared Leto.
how do you think he feels about this movie? Because I know he was pissed that he wasn't even told.
I remember reading that when it happened, and I'm like, you know what? It's almost like the people didn't like you sending dead animals and pulling weird, gross, genuinely like cruel pranks on your staff and fellow actors. It's almost like they didn't enjoy that and didn't want to be around you anymore. And also your character is unironically a joke. And has honestly, I was thinking about this. If Jared Leto Joker didn't exist, then people would be taking this movie more seriously, because Jared Leto Joker like tarnished the name of the Joker character and has allowed this whole wave of like those like incel memes and stuff to really pop into the limelight. Like, man, God, he was so bad. And I still can't forgive DC and Warner Bros. For when they released the first concept art of Jared Leto and he had the damage tattoo on his forehead, and everyone was like, that's terrible, don't do that. And they said, oh, no, we're not. It's just a homage to, like, the Joker, you know, it's just some funny concept art we've done. And then it was in the movie, and, like, what? Oh, they were in too deep at that point. And, what a mess. I could rant. I could do a whole, like, episode ranting about Jared Leto Joker. But at the same time, I do want to watch the Suicide Squad extended cut, because apparently it's just more Joker scenes, and I want to see those. I hate it, but I need to see more. Just morbid curiosity. But so in my head, I'm just completely retconning Jared Leto Joker from the Joker canon.
he goes to F tier instantly.
Oh yeah. It's hard to say. They're all so different.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting looking back at Jack Nicholson Joker, because at the time, all the critics and even Jack Nicholson himself came out saying nobody's going to play the Joker better than him. And I love Jack Nicholson, but I think his performance is like, it's not one of the top ones anymore. I really think Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix take the cake.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to compare the two, but because they're handled so differently.
And I think
we get the most time with Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. We get like the whole movie of just him and with him, and so much of his weird charisma and Joaquin Phoenix's like physical acting. And like, we get so much more of that like insight and immersion, where Christopher Nolan's Heath Ledger Joker was like mysterious. We didn't see him, and that was scarier. Like, we had no idea where he was and what.
It's interesting, because I think honestly Joaquin owes a lot of his performance to Heath Ledger's Joker. I don't think it would be a remotely similar performance if we didn't have this on before. He's obviously taken a lot from it, which is fine. But there's a there's like two visual references to Heath Ledger's Joker when he's in the cop car. It's a similar shot to in The Dark Knight where he's like leaning out of the cop car. It's like similarly structured. But there's also when he like grabs the camera and faces it towards him. Just I think that was cute. But
Everyone's comparing that, and there's all these memes of it on Twitter of people being like, maybe you missed this subtle reference of the shot of Joaquin Phoenix Joker smiling out the window. And I think, it is a reference to the Christopher Nolan shot, but it also kind of is a throwback to earlier in the movie when there's the exact same shot of Arthur Fleck being sad in a car. Or it might be in the bus, I can't remember. But it's the exact same shot.
Yeah.
So it's like before and after kind of. That's what they were definitely going for there, regardless of whether it was a throwback to the the Heath Ledger Joker hanging out the cop car window shot.
But Mitch, if you might have missed that subtle reference, but how about all my Joker dream theories? Does anyone notice that subtle reference?
But yeah, Joker... it really does feel like Joaquin Phoenix went back and watched all the good portrayals of Joker, read like the comic, like he definitely went through the character as he existed before and like really figured out the core like elements that make him the Joker. Like fundamental stuff that as a normal film watcher, you wouldn't even like think to like capture, like he put so much effort into. And I'm putting this whole movie, I'm giving it all to Joaquin Phoenix. All the praise goes to Joaquin Phoenix. Like, that's the biggest golden star.
I think 90% of it is, but like obviously you still need a talented director to do the rest. But it's weird to see a movie like this where it feels so producerless, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like, again, what I was saying earlier about how the moral,
it doesn't feel tainted or like reshot or like it feels like it's a cohesive vision.
Yeah. something I've noticed with Hollywood movies is so many movies get announced every week. They're like, they're making a this movie, they're making a that movie, but in the end people are only going to make movies if A, they genuinely want to, and there's a creative team who are committed to producing it, in which case this Joker movie, I even remember when it first appeared on the scene, like a IGN news article or something, it was like, oh, this guy wants to make a Joker movie. And it just moved along smoothly.
Wasn't it like one of six scripts or something?
Oh, they were supposed to make a Jared Leto standalone Joker movie. Like,
now that's the real Joker.
You could tell. And this was, nobody wanted to make it. Like, nobody wanted to make it.
Only one person wanted to make it.
Jared Leto probably. I have a feeling even he didn't want to make it. Like,
no. Probably would have. I think he's like, I want a second chance, guys, please.
Oh.
No one can play the Joker twice in live action.
Yeah, that's true. One is that people want to make the movie, and two is that the studios force it to happen out of financial obligation. Which is how you get movies like Fantastic Four.
Oof.
That's it. Like, those kind of movies. It's like, those are the only two ways movies get made. Like, nobody just kind of happens to be like, oh, you know what, maybe we should make a movie. Oh, yeah. Kind of.
Oh, yeah, here's $3 million.
I mean, I'm sure it has happened in the past. Like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know. But... yeah, and this movie definitely feels like it was an actual passion project, and you can feel that in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, it's just strange how, like, this came out feeling so untainted. Because how many people were like, or how many producers would be like, you can't have it without the Batman in it. Get it?
Oh my god.
You know?
Think about how bad this movie could have been. This movie could have been so bad.
Yeah, they could have ruined it in editing. Like, it's a miracle it came out the way it did.
Yeah.
Considering it's like an R rating in America.
Yeah. It's a big boy movie for grown-ups.
Oh, that reminds me of someone told me that they saw on Facebook, someone was like, The Joker is not a superhero movie. Don't take your 8-year-old to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
people will. People are dumb.
The rating system is in place for a reason. That's just bad parenting.
Oh, yeah. People, no. My friend who works at a cinema said that when that movie Sausage Party came out, he had to like ward. He had to ward off families. People had like whole families, like little kids, like the parents came to the cinema to see Sausage Party because it looked like a kid's movie, even though it was like all over the advertising how it's like rated R, and it's honestly one of the most like crude movies I've ever seen. And like, I don't want to think about how many kids and families saw that movie, like power dashed out of the theater, like the moment it starts.
Oh, but yeah. Speaking about a theater, were you a little nervous when Joker was in a theater? Like, there's a scene where he's like walking around the theater, and I was just like thinking about that Dark Knight Rises movie shooting, and I was like, don't go there, guys. And they didn't, thank God.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They skirted around it.
Yeah. They probably shouldn't have just been in the cinema. Just out of kind of respect, you know?
Maybe but, avoid that connection, because that may be giving the controversy some some legitimacy. Anyhow, we should probably wrap it.
I think I've kind of run out of thoughts.
I don't think I have. I think I'm going to be thinking about this movie till the end of the year, and then possibly more. I loved it.
My thoughts, as I said. For me, I'm still a bit conflicted. Overall, I did enjoy it, and I like what it represents in this superhero climate. And I like kind of just to see a movie that obviously people were passionate about making. And I love seeing Joaquin dance. But
yeah, we need more of that.
Go see it. Go see it and come up with a consensus yourself. And I promise in future episodes, I'm not going to say that for every movie. I am going to try my best to give more clear cut. Oh my god, Siri just responded. Siri somehow just picked up me talking, tried to talk back to me just then.
Siri, don't talk back, that's rude.
Siri, it's not your time to talk about the Joker movie.
Yeah, you weren't invited.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. I liked it. Very kind of conflicted opinions about it, but as a whole, I say go see it.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a must see.
All right, that's episode one. Hopefully we're going to get another episode out week by week, or at least fortnightly. I think the plan roughly is to try and get a new movie every 2 weeks. On the in-between weeks, we'll do like other stuff, like old movies, or who knows, leaving it open at this point. But yeah, hope you enjoyed. Cool.
Catch you.